Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sun Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Some show notes if you are looking for some professional wrestling in the next few days. Tonight, WCWO like usual at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, PSW in Piedmont, Alabama, RCW in Springbrook, Alberta, PWA in Parksville, B.C., SCWA in Los Angeles, California, New Wave Pro in Terre Haute, Indiana, both tonight and tomorrow, NSCW in Hardin, Kentucky, and FLW in Minot, North Dakota, tomorrow night. AWS in Southgate, California, PAW in East Haven, Connecticut, APW in Statesboro, Georgia, IWA Mid-South in New Albany, Indiana, IWX in Memphis, Indiana, WWA in Owensboro, Kentucky, MCW in Joppa, Maryland, ECWA in Woodbury Heights, New Jersey, NWF in Cincinnati, Ohio, RWR in Katy, Texas, WPW in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, GXW in Richmond, Virginia, and Northwest Pro in Vaughan, Washington tomorrow. So lots of professional wrestling happening. Get out there, support your local independent wrestling promotions, wherever they may be. Would also like to point out for everyone that may not be aware, the winner of the Casey Carlisle Coffee Contest, Mrs. Sangai, with the correct number of cups at 22. That was her guess, 22, and an astounding 22 cups of coffee consumed by Casey Carlisle during her Northwest tour. So, for those wondering how many cups she could consume, and for those wondering, contest completely legitimate, and she can consume 22 cups over 3 3/4 days. Like we were saying, lots going on, lots of wrestling up in our neck of the woods. Vaughan, Washington has Northwest Pro. I believe there is a tournament happening tomorrow night. So get out there, support that. And I believe our guest is with us. Let me bring him on right away. Our guest today, I would like to introduce Mr. Rex Sterling. Rex, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, brother. I'm glad to be here, man.
Our first question for you is our traditional first-timers question, since it is your first time with us. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, you know, my dad, really, he introduced me when I was really young. My father was a professional wrestling fan for most of his life. And he grew up here in North Carolina, where I grew up in a town called Rocky Mount, which is right pretty much dead center on I-95 on the East Coast. There's a ballpark here in Rocky Mount where old Mid-South wrestling would come to. Guys like Steamboat and Flair would come to the Rocky Mount ballpark and wrestle and things like that. My dad got into it real early. So when he had me, he would, even before I could speak, he would have me sitting there right beside him watching wrestling. So, you know, my earliest memories are of, you know, having little toys and making them wrestle and body slam each other and stuff like that, man. So I was really into it from a very, very early age. As far as actually getting into the business, I did not actually consider being a professional wrestler until I was 14 years old. I read Mick Foley's first book. And I enjoyed reading it so much, and I enjoyed reading about how he got into the business. And, you know, at that time, of course, I was, you know, a huge fan. You know, this is when the Monday Night Wars were going on, you know, Nitro and Raw. I mean, wrestling was just so hot then, and I was such a big fan. And I, you know, I just started to think, you know, maybe I could just do this, you know. Like, I enjoy it so much. And so I didn't really get deep into, like, backyard wrestling and stuff like that. But my best friend in high school, his name was Nick Lynch. And me and Nick, in the 10th grade, we started hanging out at my house and talking about wrestling, playing wrestling video games, you know, No Mercy and all that. And we started, like, backyard wrestling and stuff like that a little bit. And I had a trampoline in my backyard, and we would try out different moves and stuff. And this is at this time, I still didn't know much about independent wrestling at all, you know. So my dad would occasionally take me to an independent show that would come to the area, and we would see moves that you didn't see on TV, you know, things like that. So we'd try them in my backyard and stuff like that, and we would talk about how we wanted to be wrestlers. When I was 18, when I was a senior in high school, my father took me and Nick to a local show. And we had decided that we were going to watch the show, and then after the show, maybe talk to some of the wrestlers to see about, like, how do you become a professional wrestler? Because I had no idea. I had looked online, and I knew that there were schools and things like that, but there weren't any, you know, within a reasonable distance from me. I didn't have my own vehicle at the time, so making, like, a really long drive, 3, 4, 5 hours to a wrestling school wasn't really an option. So we went to a local show. And when the show was over, I started approaching wrestlers and just saying, hey, man, like, I really want to do this. Like, I love pro wrestling, and I really want to be a pro wrestler. And I don't know if any of you guys train students or anything like that, but, you know, I really want to do this. And eventually I found my way to a tag team that was on that show. And it was two wrestlers that were on that show, local guys, they wrestled under the names Vinny Vane and Vax. And they told me that they would train students in Greenville, North Carolina, which is, I think it was about maybe an hour, 15 minutes, hour 30 tops. And they said, if you want to do this, Vinny has a ring on his property at his home. You can come on Sunday and have a tryout. It's a tryout's two parts. So you can come on Sunday, and you'll have the first part of your tryout. And if you make it through that, you can come next Sunday for the second part of your tryout. If you make it through that, then discuss, you know, some serious training for you. And me and Nick were super excited. And, you know, of course, we had to pay for our tryouts. And, you know, God bless my dad. He really did help out. And my grandmother. I lived with my dad and my grandmother at the time. And, you know, they both helped pay for the tryouts. I think it was like, I don't know, I think it was like $250, something like that. And so we went and we had our first tryout. And the first tryout consisted of the first, like, 30, 40 minutes was primarily just them running us, trying to make us puke, you know, making us run, making us do push-ups, squat, and just various exercises, just trying to break us down. And then once we made it through that and wanted to keep going, then they just kind of beat us up a little bit. They beat us up for about an hour, you know, not like to hurt us, you know, but to see if, you know, how bad we really wanted to do this. So we made it through the first tryout. We came back the second week for the second part of the tryout. We made it through that. And then I began regularly training with Vinny Vane and Vax and other wrestlers in the area that would stop by on Sundays. And that's how I started, man. And I think I trained for maybe 5-6 months tops before I had my first match, and it was against Nick. And then it just went from there.
Now, one of the promotions that you have worked for in the North Carolina area is one that is my only dream in life to get to. It'll happen pretty soon, I believe. I will make my way to Gouge, and I know that you are an alumni of Gouge. For someone that has not been there but plans to make it to Gouge, can you tell us a little bit what to expect from the fine people over at Gouge Pro Wrestling?
You mean in terms of as a fan showing up to a Gouge show, or what to expect, like, in the back and, like, business-wise?
A little of both, if you wouldn't mind.
No, that's fine. It took me a long time. I think it would surprise a lot of people to know how long it took me to get to Gouge. Because Gouge, I think Gouge stands for Gimmicks Only Underground Grappling Entertainment, I believe.
And
when I first started wrestling, I did have a gimmick. I had a masked gimmick. I was using, God, it's embarrassing to talk about now, but I was using a Hayabusa mask. And I was doing this, Japanese masked wrestler gimmick. Mainly because when I first came out, I wasn't good at all, really. And so I didn't want to put my face out there when I knew the talent. You know, I didn't want to create a bad name for myself. You know, like, I knew that once I got to a point where I felt really confident, I could drop the mask and be somebody else. So my first gimmick was called Kid Silver. And when I was ready to drop that gimmick, when I was tired of the mask and I wanted to talk and I wanted to do promos and things like that, I had to decide on a new name, and I chose Rex Sterling. And that was actually Vinny Vane who recommended that, because he was thinking of, like, you know, it would be like a little shout out to your original gimmick, you know, Sterling Silver. So that's how the name Rex Sterling came about. But once I became Rex Sterling, I didn't have much of a gimmick anymore. I was just, this obnoxious, it was mostly heel everywhere I went. So I was just kind of this obnoxious young brat. But it's not really much of a gimmick. So I didn't find my way to Gouge until much later, after I got established in a lot of other places. I got to go to Gouge. And Gouge, as far as what it was like going there in the back, it was great. The wrestlers there that were on the roster at the time that I went there, they were all very kind, very respectful. It was a very comfortable atmosphere. Count Grog, who's the promoter, and I can't remember his real name, and I think his real name is Greg, and I feel terrible about not being able to remember that too clearly, but I believe his name is Greg, and he treated me great. One of the nicest promoters I've ever dealt with in professional wrestling, and one of the most honest promoters I've ever dealt with. Gouge is a really fun show. The emphasis really is on fun. All the gimmicks, just the way they present their show top to bottom, it's really enjoyable to be a part of as a wrestler and to come and watch as a fan, you know. And, you know, of course, I think one good thing that they do is I really do think that they appeal to both a younger audience with all of, like, the creative and funny gimmicks that they have. But they also have, you know, very serious, very talented wrestlers there as well. So, you know, older, like, more hardcore fans and stuff can still go to a Gouge show and enjoy it top to bottom. I think Gouge has, like, a really special thing going on, and I'm happy that they've been around so long and that they're still around. And I recommend anybody go check them out.
Now, someone else that you came across in your career at one point in time, someone that was up here in the Pacific Northwest, our neck of the woods, last week, at one point in time you came across Casey Carlisle. I'm sure you've seen the evolution of her career since the two of you crossed paths. What was it like with her on a show, and what has been the progress as far as you have seen out of her?
Man, unfortunately, I have come across Casey Carlisle, but this was mostly in probably like 2004, 2005, 2006, very early in my career, when I didn't have a good mind for the business. I didn't know the difference between – I really didn't know the difference between a good wrestler and a bad wrestler in terms of, you know, putting matches together and stuff like that. I was still just so young and not really in any point to judge someone else as far as, you know, whether – you know, what I thought, like, oh, this person can go, this person can't, this person's smart, this person's not, this person's reckless, this person's safe, things like that. I had no real grasp on that early in my career. I didn't come across Casey too much after that. I have heard a lot about her, and I come across, like, you know, posts about how she's doing and stuff like that on Facebook here and there. But unfortunately, I was never really close with Casey, and I never really got to spend much time with Casey after a very brief stint early in my career, so I'm just not really able to comment on that too much.
All right, no problem. Now, I know that at one point in time you suffered a pretty serious injury, and it's taken a while for you to be able to make your comeback. Do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about the injury situation and where you currently stand?
Well, as far as injuries, like, injuries kind of started to become significant for me in 2008. That was after I had a brief stint in Ring of Honor and FIP Pro in Florida. I injured my knees very early in my career, in training, actually, because I just did not know how important it was to protect your knees. The first time I seriously damaged my knee, I was doing frog splash in training. And my knee pad had slipped down to my shin, and I didn't realize it. And it was my first time ever doing a move off the top like that, and I did it. And halfway into the move, I was like, man, you know, I was doing it on my trainer. And I was like, man, I really, you know, I don't want to, you know, I knew I was light, and I knew I could probably land on him with all my weight, like really stretch out. But I just, I don't know, I got kind of nervous about it in midair, so I braced on my hands and knees, and immediately injured. I think it was my left knee at that time. And I never had insurance, and I don't come from a family that, you know, my family was very check to check. So I wasn't able to really see a doctor about it, but I'm pretty sure I tore meniscus in it. I don't think I've ever torn my ACL, PCL, or MCL, but I think I've torn the meniscus in both my knees pretty much to shreds. When I was in 2008, my knees, both of them, started to lock up on me quite regularly. You know, I picked up a lot of weight. I think when I got into professional wrestling, I was maybe 150 pounds. And the highest weight that I ever got up to was 187. And I think in 2008, I was around 180. And once I had that weight on me, my knees started to just lock up. After any kind of, like, cardio training and things like that, my knees would lock up straight. I couldn't bend them. And so I ended up taking a break from the business in 2008 because of that. And I was kind of in and out due to, you know, injuries in my knees. I came back in 2010, and I was having a really good comeback in 2010 when my knees started to lock up again. And I took time off to deal with that. It wasn't until 2012 or 2013. I got back into the business in 2013. With a local promotion in North Carolina called Edge Pro Wrestling, and it was run by a guy named Kendall Williams, and I think that was his wrestling name. And you spend so much time calling guys by their work names, sometimes you don't even know a guy's real name. But Kendall reached out to me and wanted me to work for his promotion, because when he got into the business, when he was still, you know, had no experience and just wanted to be in the business, I had actually purchased the ring that I trained in from my trainer in like 2006, 2007, somewhere there. And Kendall lived in, I believe, Nashville, North Carolina, which is, you know, maybe 10 miles from Rocky Mount. And a friend met up with me and came over, and I was one of the first person to ever introduce him to pro wrestling and got in the ring and worked with him a little bit. I didn't formally train him, but I worked with him quite a bit, and, you know, then he went off and did his own thing. I think he went up to New Jersey for a while, got formally trained, came back to North Carolina and started his own promotion and really wanted me to be a part of it because of the part that I had in helping him get into the business. So I started to come back in 2013, I believe it was May. And, you know, at the time, and when I first started in 2013, I was maybe just doing a show a month, maybe one or two shows. And in 2014, I got really serious about it and started taking bookings everywhere again. And it was going really well in 2014 for me. I got licensed in Virginia again. I went back up to wrestle for VCW, Vanguard Championship Wrestling in Virginia, which is one of my favorite promotions to wrestle for. A lot of my best matches were up there. And I had two shows in VCW. One of them was a tag match with Damian Wayne against Phil Brown and C.W. Anderson, which was a big deal for me to work C.W. He's the main guy that I worked in that match. Wayne and Phil Brown started it off, I believe, and then tagged out at the same time, and me and C.W. got in. There was my first time working C.W. Anderson. It was kind of a big deal for me because I had been around C.W. Anderson from the very first year when I was still the first year of my career. I was still considered a trainee. I was still under my trainers, Vinny and Vax. They had all the say in my bookings and things like that. They introduced me to C.W. Anderson at a local show, probably maybe when I was maybe one or two matches in. I was always scared of C.W. Anderson, you know. C.W. Anderson had, he had been all over. He's been all over the world, man. And he had a reputation, which I don't know how warranted it was, but he had a reputation for, you know, if you mess up in the ring with C.W. Anderson, you know, he'll hurt you, you know. And, you know, rumors like that, they get started by a lot of guys that have been places and done things, you know. A lot of guys will tell you that and kind of just to mess with you a little bit. So I had always wanted to wrestle C.W., but I was so nervous. I'm glad I didn't work him early in my career because I would have messed up in the ring with him. He probably would have had to, you know, set me straight in the ring, so to speak, because I still didn't really know what I was doing. But stepping in the ring with him in 2014, this is right before I got hurt. I had two shows that day. I had one in North Carolina, and then I worked that show, and I got really injured in that show. It was a tag match with Damian Wayne, and in that tag match in North Carolina, there was we were facing another team. And they went for a double team move on me, and it got botched. There was a miscommunication on it, and I got dropped on my shoulder. And I still don't know what the injury was to my shoulder, but it was pretty bad. I tore something, and so when I got up to VCW to have that match, I was really nervous about it, but it was great. Everything went really well. And when I got back to North Carolina, I stopped at my job that I worked at here in Rocky Mount. And are you still there? Did I lose you?
No, we still have you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Everything went silent for a second. I didn't know if the call had dropped. But I came back down to North Carolina. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I stopped at my regular job here in North Carolina. And it was at 2 a.m. when that job let out. It was actually at a call center here in North Carolina, in Rocky Mount. And I stopped there real quick and was speaking to one of my coworkers. We were standing in the parking lot. It was November 19th or November 14th, something like that, 2014. It was right after that show. And we were sitting there talking in a parking spot. There were no cars around. We were just sitting there talking, and a car was coming around, leaving the parking lot, and I thought the car was just going to go around me. It got really close to me, but I thought the car was just going to go around me, and they hit the gas to go to a stoplight, and they just turned right into me and hit me, and I went right up on the hood of the car, rolled up over the car, down onto the asphalt. I mean, it was very dramatic, and what had happened was it was a really cold night in November, and there was frost on everyone's windshield. And the young lady that hit me, she had scraped the frost off of the driver's side of her windshield only. And I was on the passenger side, and she couldn't see me. So she hit me on that side of her car. And I had to go to the hospital. I had to get MRIs on my lower and middle spine. I think I accrued something like $17,000 worth of medical bills getting treatment for a long time after that. And as far as, you know, how it affects me to this day, I mean, I still have like a lot of, I don't want to say nerve damage, but I still have a lot of pain from it, a lot of numbness, things like that. But the biggest thing right now is I am still in the middle of settling with her insurance company. And I actually spoke to my attorney before this interview to see like what I could, you know, what I could say, you know, what I could talk about, what I couldn't talk about, because that case is still being settled. And I really was hoping that I would be able to talk about, you know, maybe my future in wrestling. But right now, the most that I'm able to say until the settlement is finalized is that, you know, I have been told this week that I can start training again and see where my body is at. I'm not really sure, you know, because it's not just really the car accident. I mean, that certainly, you know, didn't help any, but a lot of injuries. I've had a lot of serious injuries, and a lot of not so serious injuries in my career that have built up over time. And I've, over the past year and a half, really started to feel a lot of it. I figured I would wait until this interview to, you know, formally say or announce, I don't want to be too dramatic, but that, you know, I'm going to actually start tomorrow training to hopefully come back. I got to see where my body is at first, see what I can and can't do, and then I'll know where I can and cannot go. I have a Snapchat, Rex Sterling. Anybody who wants to follow that, I'm going to be daily posting, you know, updates on, you know, what I do, how I train, where I train. So anybody who's interested on, you know, seeing from basically back to the drawing board, you know, I've lost, you know, I'm back down to maybe like 155 pounds. I haven't been in the ring or had any kind of serious training since the car accident, so I am literally back to the drawing board. So anybody who wants to see, you know, what it's like to go from zero all the way to hopefully a very successful comeback can watch that, you know, daily on my Snapchat as I try to make that comeback. And then I've got a Twitter too at Rex Sterling where I'll be updating. And my Facebook is down right now. I'm actually redesigning that and getting that set up. So I'm gonna try and have, you know, plenty of, you know, social media accounts where people can follow my progress and, you know, and see it as it all starts to come together. But right now, I'm not able to say whether or not I'll ever be able to wrestle again. All I can say is that I intend to find out.
Well, hopefully we'll get to see you in a ring again. Hopefully your body will allow that. And at this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by. I know QT has questions for you as well, so I'm going to put you into the hands of QT for a bit.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you, Sungay. Hello, Rex.
How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Temporarily parked outside a Firestone tire center on a military base. Coming to you in my car. Yes.
Well, that's actually, you know, it's kind of ironic because of parked outside of a TJ Maxx parking lot in my car as well. So I guess we're just doing this from our cars today.
Oh, wow. All right. This may be the first Turnbuckle Turmoil car-to-car interview. Yes.
Hey, man, we're setting records. I love it.
Oh, wow, this is a sign. This is very good, that sign. I log that down in our Turnbuckle Turmoil logbook, that this may be the first car-to-car interview. Very important. Yes. Okay. All right, Rick, I saw your YouTube video entitled Rick Sterling versus the Caramel Candy, James Anthony, and what struck me was when James Anthony made his entrance, he was wearing a blue do-rag and what appeared to be Ray-Ban sunglasses. These are the required symbol of the Mid-Atlantic motorcycle gang, the Filthy Few. Question is, before your match, did you do a background check at Roanoke, Virginia police station to see if James Anthony belonged to this outlaw motorcycle club, the Filthy Few?
That's a great question. I did not. Knowing James Anthony, I don't know which match it was. I know what time period you're talking about, and that was actually, I believe that was an Edge show. I believe that was, that's more than likely when he was, I believe he was he AIWF Cruiserweight champion at the time? Yeah, we had two matches for that belt, within a couple of months of each other, while at Edge. So I don't know if you're referring to the first match or the first match was around 20 minutes long. The second match, we trimmed some of the fat off, did a couple things different, and that match was probably around fall. Probably the first match. I didn't do any background check on him, but having met him before, having known him, I wouldn't expect him to be affiliated with anything like that. For me, like the glasses and the do-rag was just mainly for my hair at the time. I believe this was when I had really long hair. I've had really long hair and really short hair while I was wrestling, but I think at this time I had long hair, and I just needed something to keep my hair out of my eyes. And I would also use it in the match every once in a while. I would take the do-rag off at the beginning of the match when the bell rung. And instead of tossing it out of the ring, I would toss it in my opponent's face to distract him and then attack him. But no, that was maybe 2-3 months tops into that comeback. And I was just experimenting with a few different things at the time. And that's all that was. I think I ended up dropping that relatively quickly because I just didn't feel like it was cool. I didn't feel like it really fit me or my ring persona, but I'm always down to, you know, experiment and try new things and try different looks and things like that.
Wow, all right. Okay. Well, Rex, in the world of street gangs, many gangs have junior membership, 15 years old, that form a minor league or apprenticeship programs. There are rumors that James Caramel Candy Anthony was in one of these. Are there any truth to the rumors that his junior apprenticeship gang, the Money Over Broke Bitches, once rumbled with the Mongolian Boy Society at a Gouge wrestling event?
Wow. I honestly don't know, but I will tell you that as far as the Caramel Candy goes, I mean, now seeing him in a typical gang is hard for me to imagine, but a junior gang, now I could see that. So I think you would have to ask him more about that. It's not he never would share with me any of the details of that stuff. Don't think I didn't ask, but I guess you got to be a member to know any of the details, and I wasn't cool enough to get all that information.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Rex, at the 120 mark of the video, when James C.C. Anthony is on the second rope holding a belt, you can see what appears to be a micro storage shed with roof attached to an 8x8 wooden slats. This 60% completed shed needs only the plywood sheeting to be completed. In hindsight, in hindsight, most people would say it slightly resembles a wooden Hell in a Cell or temporary wooden holding cell. My question is, did you plan to pile drive James Anthony into semi-consciousness and throw him into the semi-completed structure? Yes.
Well, while that would have been a great tactic, one of my dear closest brothers in the business is Damian Wayne. And anybody who knows anything about Damian Wayne knows that he treasures that pile driver. So out of respect for my brother, who I tagged with on and off in that promotion, I wouldn't use his pile driver. You know, just that's his thing. I wouldn't want to mess with it. And also, while I did have a couple of hardcore no DQ street fight matches in that promotion, in that building, James Anthony, he, you know, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he much prefers traditional in the ring technical pro wrestling, with a lot of like old school, cruiserweight, moves and old school psychology and things like that. So I don't think that James would have appreciated it had I just decided to take him out of the ring and put him in that shed. Although honestly, you know, it probably would have been so damn entertaining if I did do it that it probably, you know, the fan reaction would have probably overridden how upset he would have been. But I try to be respectful. You know, I try to you know, maintain at least some kind of base respect for all of my opponents. So with me and James, we mostly stayed in the ring. Another thing was, I mean, we were wrestling for, now I don't know if it was a legit world title. I know that the AIWF lightweight or cruiserweight belt was listed as a world title. I don't know if it was defended out of the country or not, but keeping in mind that we were wrestling for that belt and I really wanted that belt, I tried to keep things in the ring to avoid anything like a disqualification.
Wow, all right. And you say that probably was for the light heavyweight championship?
What was that, sir? I'm sorry?
And that was for the light heavyweight championship?
Yeah, that was for both times I wrestled him. It was for that AIWF lightweight title.
Oh, wow, okay, all right. Well, Rex, we have a wrestler out here in the Northwest with a similar build and ring style to James Anthony. His name is CJ Little Chocolate Drop Edwards. Bullet Sign Guy.
I'm sorry, it's great. I love it.
Oh, that's fine. Bullet Sign Guy and myself have CJ Little Chocolate Drop in action recently at Blue Collar Wrestling. My question is, have you heard any truth to the rumors of an October matchup between the Caramel Candy and Little Chocolate Drop?
I have not heard anything about a possible match between the two. Sadly, and this is one thing that I discussed in email correspondence before I got, you know, onto this interview, is that I'm really out of the loop with the indies, really out of loop with what's going on TV and things like that for the past year or so. I haven't really been able to keep up with things. You know, I've been, you know, working a lot and doing this whole adulting thing. It's trash and I hate it, but I've been had a lot on my plate in the past year and a half, so I haven't really been able to keep up with it. But if you were to ask me if I was booking, and I did get to do that for Sten Edge, but if I was booking, that would either be, you know, definitely a dream match or possibly a great tag. Who knows? I think James Anthony may be currently, I know he was tagging with, I believe, Victor Andrews. I think they actually got to do some stuff in Ring of Honor together. I don't know what the current status of that is, if he's focusing on singles or tag, but you got to get those guys together. I mean, Chop the Drop and Caramel. I mean, it just sounds like they got this whole thing already set up. They just need to be putting the ring together.
I just think it sounds neat, the caramel candy versus a little chocolate drop. Yes.
Right. I mean, that sounds like something Gouge would love to host. Like, can we – somebody call Greg. We need to make it happen, Gouge. That would be the perfect setting for it.
Well, maybe if Sign Guy does make his debut in Gouge, he can bring CJ Little Drop with him. I'll fund part of that. That's what I'm saying. I'll fund the trip. Okay.
That's what I'm hoping as well. I think that would be great. I would love for them to actually just break out a cell phone or anything and make videos of Little Chocolate Drop and the caramel candy on the road together. I think that would be hilarious. I think that'd be great for put that on YouTube.
Yeah.
I think that would get some views.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Rex, at the 11 minute and 12 second mark of the match, if you freeze the video, you are walking toward a fallen James Anthony outside the ring. This is right before you give him a knife edge chop. On the ring apron, it says Affinity Bail Bonds. My question is, do you know if James Anthony works part-time for Affinity Bail Bonds or has a relative of his ever had to use their services?
Ooh, controversial territory. I don't know the answer to that as me and James, although, like I said, I've worked with him in the past and I've been in a locker room with him plenty of times. We haven't really discussed too much of, you know, his possible criminal history, although, again, I've asked, but for some reason, it's like he doesn't trust me with that information, like he thinks I'm going to go on an interview and talk about it. But I know that Affinity Bell was one of the main what's the word I'm looking for? They were one of the main contributors to Edge Pro Wrestling. They were an affiliate with the company. They put in for advertising and stuff like that. And we were very happy, very lucky, really, to be associated with them and to have them help sponsor our shows. I don't know if James ever used their services or worked for them. But I have a feeling that there were plenty of people in the audience that had, this part of town is rough. Let me tell you, this part of town is rough. So, we probably could have done with a couple of bail bonds businesses, advertised on the ring apron in this part of town, brother. It ain't Detroit, but it's rough around Rocky Mount. So, I felt like it was a very fitting sponsor, and I feel like we both mutually benefited from that business relationship.
Wow, all right, okay. All right, well, speaking of knife-edge chops, what's the hardest one you have ever received, and was it from a wrestler named Congo Kong?
I'm sorry, what was the first part of that question again, brother?
Speaking of knife-edge chops, what's the hardest one you have ever received?
Well, it was not from the wrestler that you listed in the second part of the question. What'd you say that wrestler's name was?
Congo Kong.
Congo Kong?
Yes, if you had ever if you've heard of or ever received one from Congo Kong.
I have not, but the hardest chop I've ever received. There's been some hard ones, but I probably have to give it to Damian Wayne. Damian Wayne has left more handprints and busted open my chest and left it bloody and marked up more than anyone in the business, man. I remember I had one of my first matches in FIP was a triple threat match with me, Danny Daniels, and Damian Wayne. And during that match, Damian Wayne chopped me, caught me right on the nipple and split my nipple open, brother. Like, Damian Wayne has, he's definitely, I meant to ask this at the beginning of the interview. Was there?
Wow, he split your nipple? Oh, my gosh. Okay, wow. All right. Well, the split nipple would be kind of a good name for a drink at a bar in that neck of the woods. Yes.
Yes, it would. Yes. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it would, man. Yeah, Yeah, so, I mean, Damian's chops are pretty heavy. I think that there's some guys out there with reputations for having harder chops, but I have not encountered them. Wayne is, you know, he's lit me up more than anybody else in the business by far.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you attempted a third knife-edge chops on James at the 11:33 mark as his back was against the steel ring post, but he moved and your hand backhanded the cold, hard, unforgiving, unmoving, unflinching steel. Do you consider this to be a turning point in the match when your hand hit that steel?
I mean, you know, it's just so disrespectful of him to move out of the way, you know, first of all, and put me in that situation. I mean, that was my me time hand, you know, and you know, it was out of action for a long time after that, man. It was extremely painful. I believe I may have been wearing gloves in that match. I know in a couple of matches around that time, I was wearing gloves. So that may have, you know, slightly lessened the damage. But I would not go as far as to say that it was a turning point. It affected my momentum shortly. And I think that he took advantage of that and started to build some momentum for himself. I don't believe it led to the end of the match or anything like that. I don't think that I considered it at that time or looking back to be a big deal or that serious, simply because, I mean, I've wrestled with, you know, injuries, you know, worse than that, including a broken left arm, a broken foot, concussions and things like that. I've completed matches, and those were serious. Those had effects on my matches. But that particular chop did not. I think I handled it pretty well. This was, you know, I was probably almost 10 years in the business at that point, so I could handle that.
Wow. All right. Okay. All right. Well, Rex, from the 13-minute and 16-second mark to the 13:25 mark, you had James in a side abdominal stretch for a period of 9 seconds. You then reached out with your right arm and grabbed the top rope as the referee was concentrating on James and was asking him if he was submitting. Your right arm was acting as a fulcrum or lever to increase the pressure on his side by doubling the cubic centimeter pressure per square inch on his side. My question is, at what Mid-East Coast Community College did you study physics, and do you consider yourself one of the more scientific wrestlers in a majority of the organizations you have wrestled for?
Brother, I just got to say you're one of the most observant human beings I've ever met. And in terms of being interviewed, one of the most observant, one of the better, most in-depth questions. I love that. I didn't study at a community college for it. I actually dropped out of college to pursue professional wrestling. You know, I went to college on an academic and theater scholarship. I originally wanted to be an actor, and I guess in a lot of ways I achieved that. But you know, I said, I've got a bright future. Why not just drop out, throw all that away to make $25 to drive to Virginia? Why not? You know, it sounds great. That was my plan. I did it. But as far as grabbing the ropes to anchor myself down, I mean, that's purely instinct. You know, again, at that point, that's more based on, you know, just experience being in the ring. You know, at this point in my career, so many things that I do in the ring are just based on, you know, clutch in the moment decisions that I make based on experiences that I've had. I mean, I'm wrestling for, you know, a prestigious belt. I need this man to submit. Oh, I got to pin him. I got to do something. You know, if grabbing the rope gets me there at that point, I was willing to do it. And I mean, this referee was weak. I knew he wasn't going to disqualify me. It was a high profile match. So, you know, I was just trying to get the win, man. As far as, you know, how technical I consider myself, I do consider myself to – I think that as far as – I think I can hang
with just about any wrestler in the world, no matter how technical they are. I'm not as good as some of the most technical wrestlers in the world. You know, guys like, you know, Regal, Finlay, you know, Malenko when he was around. I don't know who the most technical are right now. I know Bryan Danielson was before he had to retire, things like that. I could hang with any one of those guys in the ring. I'm positive of that. And at points in my career, I was more focused on that. Early in my career, I was way more focused on, you know, being a high flyer. Later in my career, you know, once my knees were, you know, damaged moderately, I knew that I had to cut down on that and get more to, you know, that mat-based style. I think I made that transition really well. But I've always considered myself really to be very flexible. Maybe, well, I don't want to say too flexible, but I never really focused or honed in on one particular style. You know, I would get in the ring with guys that were, you know, 140, 150 pounds and fly all over the place with them. And I would get in the rings with guys who would not leave their feet, you know, and hang with them on the mat. And I would get in the ring with guys like Damian Wayne, who are very, very old school, very, you know, very blunt, lots of striking, lots of mat-based wrestling, lots of working holds and things like that. And I really enjoyed all of it. You know, of course, you know, the only style I never really did anything with was like a big man style. But, I mean, you know, come on, you know, I don't have the body for it, obviously. But, you know, as far as like if I'm physically able to do it, you know, I try to do it and I try to get experience in that style of wrestling, whether it's, you know, strong style or a technical style or striking, things like that. And I consider myself to be, you know, at least moderately proficient in all of those styles. I never really honed in or focused on one particular style. And that's something that has been on my mind in the past several months as maybe something that I should do. Is try to be a little bit more refined in how I present myself, my character, my wrestling style, so that I have something that's a little bit more identifiable. Like I never really had a particular finish. I used different finishes for a little while here, a little while there, but I never locked in like, you know, like Bob Van Dam or Jeff Hardy or, you know, other guys that have, like, you know, they all have those, like, five or six moves that you know they're going to do in every match or that, you know it's their move. I never really did that, and I never really had a particular finish. I never really felt the need to because I wasn't on TV. And I didn't wrestle in front of the same crowd consecutively enough that I felt like they were really going to catch on to things like that. So I always just kind of, you know, I just kind of flowed. I was very fluid with my style. But that's something that, you know, I'm wondering if maybe I should change if I'm able to come back is, you know, to be a little bit more specific and a little bit more refined.
Wow. All right. Okay. Well, you'll have to do some research on that and get back to us on that. And all right. Well, Rex, we play a game here on Turnbuckle Turmoil called Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk. And you are given a choice between two subject matters, and you have to answer or choose between these two choices as rapidly as you can. Are you ready to play this game?
Sure.
All right. Coke or Mountain Dew?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Coke or Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew.
Bam Bam Bigelow or Booker T?
God, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Okay.
God, that was
all
hard,
right.
Bro.
Charmel or Miss
on this interview?
Oh, very hard, yes. The existential, almost in its nature. Yes, in their nature, yes.
Sweating over here.
All right, Charmel or Miss Elizabeth?
Miss Elizabeth.
Anterior cruciate ligament tear or meniscus?
Meniscus. Sadly.
Front face? Oh, okay. Yes, Adrian Peterson has a meniscus tear. Yes, meniscus. Adrian.
It's
all right,
bro.
Kurt Angle or Robert Roode?
Angle.
Front face lock or German suplex?
German suplex.
Heart punch or eye gouge?
Whoo, heart punch.
Okay. MSNBC or Fox News?
Oh, Jesus. MSNBC.
All right. Ping pong or air hockey?
Air hockey.
NFL or NBA?
NFL.
George the Animal Steel or Ric Flair?
Oh, Flair.
Deep fried Twinkie or deep fried Snickers?
Deep fried Twinkie. Let's go.
Okay. All right. Hitler's bunker or Chairman Mao's treehouse?
I got to take the treehouse.
Oh, okay. Treehouse. Okay. Very good. All right.
Sounds good. I can jump off of it, drop an elbow on somebody.
Oh, okay. All right. Herman Munster or Uncle Fester?
Herman Munster.
All right. Tommy Chong or Cheech Martin? Cheech Martin.
Cheech.
Cheech, okay.
Hard
Gene enough. Wilder or Henry Winkler?
Gene Wilder, God bless him. Rest in peace, Bob.
Yes, Gene Wilder, yes. Very good. All right, American Dad or Big Bang Theory?
American Dad.
Oh, okay, American Dad, okay. Now, on the Big Bang Theory, is it safe to say that the character you identify most with is Raj Uthrapali?
Man, I love Big Bang Theory, but I have not seen that show in so long. You're going to have to tell me which character that is, man.
Uthrapali is a guy from India.
Oh, of course, man. I mean, like, that's basically me if I was from India, man. I'm in my heart, man.
Oh! Now, does that mean that you have to have liquor to talk to women?
I mean, I just prefer to think of it as I have to have liquor in general.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Okay. Gorilla Monsoon or Bobby the Brain... or Bobby the Brain Heenan?
Oh, another tough one, but I'm going to go with the Brain, man.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay, the Brain. Magnum P.I. rerun or on Nick at Night or the A-Team?
Man, give me the rerun on Nick at Night, man. Sounds good.
Oh, okay. All right. You're going to probably – is your choice –
I'm sorry, what was that, brother?
Is your choice the A-Team or Magnum P.I.?
Oh, I thought only the first one was it would be Magnum P.I.
Oh, okay. All right. Bald Eagle or Black Raven?
Ooh, Black Raven.
Okay, Black Raven. Okay. Commander Spock or Lieutenant Commander Data?
Data.
Okay. Redneck Backwoods Bar or Uptown Manhattan Coffee Bar?
You know, I want to go with the Manhattan, but I just think that there's going to be way more interesting stories at the Redneck Bar, so let's go with the Redneck Bar.
Wow, all right. Okay.
And have some all stories right. to tell even there.
Brock Lesnar or The Undertaker?
Undertaker.
Wow, all right. Okay, well, we thank you very much for playing Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk. And at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you, QT. Well, Mr. Sterling, we have come towards the end of the program, so I want to give you time if there's anything you would like to say to our listeners today. Plug and promote anything you have, social media, any plans for upcoming appearances, merchandising, your favorite vacuum cleaner store, anything in the world you would like to plug, floor is all yours.
I guess, you know, I just want to give a couple of shout-outs to people that have, like, really helped me get here, and I'll try to keep it, you know, quick. I really want to thank my trainers, Vinny Vane and Vax, for taking me in and helping me get my foot in the door. I really have to thank my grandmother, Bay Marin. She passed away a couple of years ago, but without her helping me, you know, like I said, I come from a, you know, close to dirt poor family, man, and I would not have been able to make trips out to places like Tampa and Chicago and be on the road up in Edison, New Jersey and things like that if it wasn't for her and my father helping me to afford those trips. So I'll give a shout-out to my father and my kid. If it wasn't for them, he'd be talking to me right now. I got to give a shout-out to Damian Wayne, who, I mean, you know, in professional wrestling, you meet a lot of people. You have a lot of acquaintances. You don't really get too many friends. And you even less than that are people that become, you know, like to you. Damian Wayne is definitely that to me. I love that guy. He's a great guy. He took me under his wing when I was already in the business but didn't have the confidence and lacked a lot of knowledge. And Damian Wayne was way far ahead of me. In fact, the first time I went to Vanguard Championship Wrestling in Virginia was wrestling him, I believe. If he would not have taken me on the road with him and had so many matches with me and been so selfless with me in the ring to give me so much shine at such an early point in my career, I just have to thank him for that, man. He's someone that I'll always respect and admire in this business. I'm really happy also for him in the success that he's found in the last 2 years, 3 years. Shout out to Sean Denny, who essentially did the same thing, a worker up in Virginia who travels as well. I love that guy. Chris Escobar, who's, I think he's up in, I don't know if he's in Delaware or, I know he's somewhere up there, but I got to sit with him for a while. We were a team called the NWA Underground. We ran together for like maybe 6 months to a year, and I had some really great matches with him as well. One of my last matches before I got injured in Virginia was with Chris Escobar, a fantastic match that we had for VCW in a tournament. I don't know if it was the Lutz Cup or what kind of tournament it was, but miss him. I want to thank Travis Bradshaw, the promoter of VCW, for giving me so much shine. Shout out to my ferret Marley, who destroys my house while I'm at work every day. Shout out to my girlfriend's cat Leo, who lives with me because I wasn't man enough to say no. Shout out to her as well. She's been real supportive in helping me to get ready for this comeback. So shout out to Jana. Shout out to Link Alexander, owns a promotional company here in North Carolina called Support Your Local Artist, SYLA. He's on Facebook and things like that. He helped when I was in the middle of my comeback in 2013, 2014. He helped sponsor me to get some new gear. He helped, you know, he helped pay for gas. He helps promote local artists in general, and he's done a lot for, you know, my Rex Sterling product. And when I come back, he'll have a hand in that as well. I'm planning to hopefully soon release probably just a 30-minute or hour-long interview with him as well, chronicling, you know, my career from beginning to end and or from beginning to where it left off and where I'm at now. You know, and hopefully, you know, for the few people out there that still keep up with me or know anything about me, you know, they'll enjoy that. Thanks to, shout out to Mark James, who has found a lot of success, I believe, in a tag team called The Brutes. He helped work with me when I was training as well. He was still pretty new in the business. And he also had matches with me and gave me shine when he didn't have to, and I want to thank him for that. And there's a lot of people. I can't name them all, but you know, I just hope that I hope that everybody that that has worked with me knows that I appreciate it, that I think about it all the time, especially now that I can't wrestle. I find myself reflecting on guys that gave me shine, that when I made mistakes in the ring, or when I did stupid stuff in the back, or when I was, you know, egotistical early in my career, instead of hurting me, instead of shooting on me in the ring, they pulled me aside and worked with me. Tom Pritchard is one of the biggest guys that did that for me. I went to 2 seminars with him, and I was extremely stupid at both of them and extremely arrogant. And he had every right to either kick me out or break my leg for how stupid I acted at his seminars and how good I thought I was, how smart I thought I was. But instead of doing that, Tom Pritchard pulled me aside and spoke to me, and he gave me a lot of good advice and chastised me as well, but he made me better. And that's what I hope that other wrestlers in the business will do, is when you see somebody slipping or when you see somebody being foolish, I really respect the guys that take time to try and make that person better, because a lot of these kids get into the business too easy. And getting into the business too easy, you don't have proper respect for it. And, you know, I see a lot of guys get hurt over that, and I far more respect workers, the vets, that pull those guys aside and work with them to make them better, to make them represent our business better. And so I thank all the guys that did that for me, and I'm sorry I can't name them all, but shout out to all of them.
Well, Rex Sterling, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today. I definitely would love to have you back, and I want to wish you the very best luck in making your in-ring return. Hopefully that will happen for you fairly soon.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for it. Like I said, anybody that wants to keep up with it, you can find me on Snapchat, Rex Sterling. You can find me on Twitter, Rex Sterling, and I'll have my Facebook up hopefully within a week, where, you know, I'll be posting about that. Hopefully I'll be able to make it out to some local shows, you know, to just see some of the guys again and things like that. And I really hope that when the time comes that I can formally announce a return date, or hopefully announce, you know, some kind of like legitimate update. And hopefully when I'm wrestling again, I really hope that you guys will, you know, let me come on again. I would love to come back and talk to you some more, man. It was really great, and I really appreciate you having me up here.
With our pleasure. Would love to have you back when we get that formal announcement. Oh, fans, keep an eye out for Rex Sterling, hoping to get back in that ring. If he does, I'm sure you're in for a treat when he's on a show near you. And we will be back with you Sunday afternoon, special start time. We got 2 big guests coming up Sunday, Frank the Tank, and then we have, out of TNA, the Pope with us. So join us an hour earlier than normal on Sunday. Stay for both big hours. We will talk to you then.
Yes, please.